All right. Well, welcome to the WebMap Social Meetup Group podcast. This is Clay Burton, producer of this series, which is generously sponsored by Directions Magazine and Endpoint Environmental. This podcast focuses on learning, sharing, and networking around current and future geospatial and social networking applications and technology. We meet on the third Tuesday evening of every month at Google headquarters in Mountain View, California. This month's podcast features Chris Butler, independent LBS evangelist. Chris will discuss location awareness and the context in which it applies to mapping and social networks.
So as I said, my name is Chris Butler. I was the content platform evangelist for Dash Navigation as of about 2 weeks ago. And I'm here now just as a consultant and a contractor. And I wanted to talk a little bit about location and the context that that matters to. And so I tried to be a little witty here with my location, comma, awareness. So how can location be used? There's actually a lot of things that are location aware today and have been for a little while. On the desktop, probably one of the older widgets that's been location aware has been weather. Being able to find out where I am or where I care about, what it feels like as far as outside. On the web, in this particular case, this is a truly a widget that will fit onto anybody's web page to really talk about what the housing prices are in a particular area. On personal and mobile, and I mean personal and mobile just because right now there's really a specific area of mobile phones, but as time goes on, more and more personal artifacts are going to have location awareness. In this case, it's the Locate Where, which is kind of a widget platform to a certain extent. Although using the word widget on a mobile phone is a little hard to say just because you can't have usually multiple of them open at the same time. So I'll use that in the word, like, very small footprint, for example. And then in auto, this is a particular product that you may or may not have heard of. It's called Dash Navigation, with a platform around integration of any third-party content. In this case, there was the ability to actually Twitter directly from your car if you wanted to. And so what does all this come down to? It really comes down to context. And location is usually what we're mostly focused on here around maps, but also it could be who, which is the social network aspect of it. But there's actually a bunch of different questions that matter when it comes to context. Where is only one of them? There's the traditional 5+1 that journalism tends to use to describe a story of some type. These are all questions that can't be answered with a yes or no answer. So where, who, when, what, why, and how are all very important aspects that should be taken together, and not necessarily just one or the other. So in today's O'Reilly Radar, I thought this was pretty appropriate. Tim basically said that, you know, all these things already exist in scattered applications, but eventually they'll be the new normal. And he was really referring to the Google Voice app that came out today. It was supposed to come out last week, but we'll talk about that. The ability that, in his particular case, what he was talking about was the ability for when you look at the phone, you pull it up to your ear, and you start speaking to it, all of those different sensor cues actually came together around the context of why I'm trying to use it. And then they also add on location. And I think that longer term, who I am, where I've actually been in the past, all those things will start to converge into one device that will be the normal, as Tim puts it. So I'm trying to put together a few important principles around this context, and then I'll go into some pitfalls and some issues that we're all trying to work on right now that need good answers, or at least better answers than what we have today. So first, use as much context as possible. So not just where, not just who, but also what, why, when, and how, if you can find it out. And that's usually easier said than done. Asking people all of those questions at once generally scares them away. And so I'd say that there are actually a set of simple rules or sets of simple rules that we can start to utilize that can work to assume context. I think one thing that is definitely underutilized on the web today is time. You all know when that particular user is accessing your website. And there's no reason that you shouldn't necessarily take that into account. Talking about, say, Dash, for example, we have the capability of doing search directly from the device. And the searches that we're in the morning versus the searches that were at night were actually pretty different. It's generally because people were doing different things. And that type of context is not something that really takes a lot of machine learning to understand necessarily. It doesn't take a lot of science. I think that's been one of the biggest issues for trying to get assumptions around context is people feel like they need to put supercomputers or some type of specialty algorithm, but a good amount of it actually can be just taken care of by understanding what humans do on a regular basis in a particular area. So in the case of Dash, you know, in the morning you'd see a lot more coffee, and at night you'd see a lot more restaurant. And really late at night you'd see search terms you know, probably don't want me to talk about right now. next is try to match the accuracy of the context across all types. So whenever someone tries to take just one of the contexts, say where, without assuming any of the others or understanding any of the others, it feels a little bit like a disjointed experience. In reality, I want to know wherever I am, who's around me, what's going on, you know, how did I get there, where am I going? All those things are really important together. You can definitely get an experience better than what we used to have if you take one of those contexts, but having them all together and at the same level of accuracy is really important. When I say level of accuracy, you know, I like thinking about newspapers as maybe the earlier widget than possible. You could go to a newspaper stand and you could look at a newsstand, see a newspaper, you can understand within the resolution of a day what time it was. You could see within the resolution of a metro area where you were, and you could see within a resolution of really famous people what was important. And so all those contexts made sense together on the newspaper. Now, when you get to being very, very hyper-local, it actually means, you know, you want to know more and more accuracy around all those other different contexts. And when I say accuracy, I also don't mean that you need to be able to pinpoint a person within a few centimeters. That really doesn't matter most of the time. That matters for NASA, that probably doesn't matter for social networking systems. And so, you know, those are things that everybody can really just try to take as assumptions and principles when they build out their experiences, when they start to think about how they apply context to their examples. But there's also a lot of places where there's just no good solution yet, or the solutions feel broken for people. And so the first one is really good notifications. I think, you know, SMS does an okay job. If you do a lot of micro-blogging or micro-messaging, IM, any of those, they all do notifications pretty well, but they kind of do them separately. And there's no way for me to assemble all of them very easily within one feed, and for me to be able to parse that, understand it, without using a bunch of different tools. And it doesn't necessarily mean that there's going to be one company that's going to own all notifications. It could be that there's just more and more standards compliance that people start to work together on these types of things. Describing privacy is another huge issue. There was a recent study that was done that talked about how if people actually had to read through all the EULAs and the terms of use and terms of service that they actually see on websites on a regular basis, they'd spend somewhere around 3 hours a month of their time just reading those documents. And that's not something that's achievable or understandable for most of our end users. So being able to describe privacy in a way that's standardized, in a way that makes sense to end users, in a way that they can take a glance at and really understand what's going on with their information, especially location is a very sensitive issue right now. That's going to be something that's going to be very important in the future. I don't think anybody's done it great yet. I mean, there's definitely sites that have tried to make good things, like Fire Eagle is definitely one of them. Even that may be a little hard for people to understand, but, you know, it's to be seen. Understanding the desire of engagement. What this means is when I'm actually at work, I maybe don't care that my friend who lives in another state went from home to work. I probably don't care about that. But I maybe care that within that resolution of a day that my friend is in town from another state or another country, and they probably don't care about the same thing that I just don't care about. But they do care about when I go on a major trip and I start sharing photos. And so understanding how to engage is really important. I think another great example is really around TV. I think a lot of people are starting to think about how, as TV and video services start to go out onto the net, how can people engage with each other while they're doing that? The truth is, though, is most people, when they watch TV, they don't want to be engaged, right? They don't want to talk to somebody else about everything. There's definitely a good cue, and this is where I think the simple rules come in. You know, if I email someone else about a particular show, I probably want to engage with them about it. But if I don't, it probably means I'm into private viewing at that moment. So really being able to gauge that, maybe it's simple rules, maybe it's something else, and maybe it's preferences, that's something I think that hasn't really been tackled that great quite yet. And then lifetime. I think this applies a lot to widgets in particular, and this is maybe part of the reason for the downfall of start pages, in my opinion. But how does the lifetime of information really affect me? In certain cases, as I grow either closer or away from certain people, I want to get less or more updates from them. Same thing with, having a, say, for example, an election countdown widget, or even the information, somehow you get that information, it kind of expires after the vote has happened. And how that converts into other information is going to be really important. So I think, I'd like to spend a lot of time with questions. I just wanted to give you a brief introduction to some principles. But I think the key point here is that it's not just about location, it's not just about the social network, it's about how you try to assemble all the different pieces of context for an end user and really try to make it so that they can take action on that understanding of context. So, thank you. And I think these slides will be available. This is the link to the O'Reilly article. You can find me on LinkedIn, and then my email. Yes, I still have a Hotmail account, but I've had it for 10 years. So, I guess, are we taking questions now? Or are we doing it? Okay, great.
Take some questions for the audience. Anybody?
I can't divulge any secrets about Dash, though. Yeah?
What are some of the major challenges you see in providing context for users?
In providing context?
Providing everything from context to begin with to accurate context.
Well, I think the thing that's going to be most difficult for any users in the near term is getting over the creepiness of it. I mean, I think that once a computer system or a website or even another, any of those types of things start to understand intent, which is a little bit of what context precludes, I think people feel a little creeped out. I think people will start to get over that as more of these services actually just help them on a regular basis. So that's one big thing. I think also there's going to be a lot of gotcha moments that end up happening for people where they didn't realize that a particular context meant a certain thing. So, being bitten by Facebook, for example, because something that you didn't want to share with everybody was shared with everybody. That's another thing that I think is going to happen more and more for people. So, context is a great thing, but it's also something that should be wielded carefully. Maybe there's some type of, just like doctors, you should do no harm with the context at the very least. So I'd say those are the two main things I think of when I think about it. Yeah?
Where do you get your information?
Yeah, sure. So where do you get your information? Do you mean the assumptions or the context? Or?
Data, research, assumptions,
yeah.
All of it.
I think... So from a research point of view, let me take it to the... I was doing a talk at the Qt conference for Nokia, which is a UI framework. And one of the things that I think is so troubling for end users when they start to utilize computers is that all of the user experience frameworks or the programming languages that we use, they tend to be very logical and beautiful. And when people try to create frameworks, they try to create them in a way that's very streamlined. But the truth is that human interaction is not at all like that. And so, and that's where I think the blindness to context feels disjointed in certain types of environments. And that's why you'll see, I thought when you do a usability study, I thought I was supposed to do this because it just made sense in my mind. And everybody's going to be, there's going to be certain differences between individuals, but overall we're just animals with emotions. So it's not super hard, and that's why I think that simple rules, just understanding time, that generally people in the morning do this, generally people in the evening do this, I think is enough. To the rest of your question around how you get that data, there's a bunch of different ways. You can definitely do a lot with data mining of usage that you already have. That's maybe one thing that's underutilized. Generally, business intelligence is one of those things that's underfunded within groups. I know that people like Google definitely take a big advantage of that. I think there's a lot of there's a couple other companies that do as well, but I do know that most of the places I've worked, generally business intelligence has not necessarily been valued as much. I think is one issue. There's all this data that's there. You just need to collect it and understand it. And maybe even before that, you need to ask the right question, right? What is the time when people are using it at this time? What is it they care about during our peak times? Maybe that's a really easy question to answer if you do the analysis. I think you should always try to avoid asking for that information. Anytime the user has to configure something, at least today, where data is not easily shareable between sites, that ends up being a roadblock to usage. And so, if anything, you should try to do as much implicit assumption as possible. Amazon does a great job of that, right? They don't ask you which... They do ask you which things you like, which things you want to buy, but more than anything, they get all their data from the stuff that you bought, right? That was in some way an implicit action that then turned into a recommendation stream. Sorry, I'm going to keep going on to additional topics as I think of them. But another one is around recommendation services. And so I think this idea of a super generalized recommendation system is not necessarily a long-term possibility. And I think it's going to end up being that it's going to be about very hyper-local searches within particular verticals. And I think you start to see that, a good example is taking Amazon, for example. If I buy a TV, I don't want to buy another TV, right? I want to buy cables and maybe a DVD player. And then I want you to understand what the lifetime of each of those objects is based on the Morse curve for new objects being created. And I should be automatically notified when I get to this point where if I'm a gadget person, it's like every 6 months I'm going to be changing something. So it's like that type of thing that's very focused, and I think that's where a lot of context is very particular to a particular segment that it's in. The good thing is that once you are focused on a particular segment, you can make a lot of simple rules that actually capture the behavior. So this hyper-intelligent recommendation engine that's generic for everything will only work if you're exactly like the crowd, and no one is. So, any other questions? Yeah?
So how much information is readily available as opposed to information that the user needs to supply?
So the question was, how much information is readily available versus how much does the user need to supply? I don't think there's not a lot of information that's readily available. I think it's also because, getting back to what O'Reilly was talking about, is that there's not really a good array of sensors, so to speak, that actually capture this information. When you see things like Open Social, you see things like Facebook, there's a lot of assumptions you can make just out of that data that's available to you there. So I don't think it's like totally, you're not without any information. It's just very rudimentary right now. I think the best things are actually to look at services that tend to be more commoditized. So look at email, look at calendars, where people really don't care about them as much as long as they have quality of service and availability. Those things are great treasure troves of information. Look at something like Mint.com, where it really takes all of your financial histories and starts to turn it into something that's meaningful to you. So it's that type of data that's not exciting to people, but it's really very powerful when you try to take it into context. Right? I think I have time for one more question, if there's more questions. Cool. Well, thank you very much. It was a great talking to you, and I'll be around afterwards, too. Thank you.
Well, I hope you enjoyed the show. For more information about the WebMap Social Meetup Group, or to review our archive of past presentations, visit our website, www.meetup.com/WebMapSocial. Also, if you want to send us any ideas, thoughts, or questions, please write us at podcast@endpointenvironmental.com. Until next time, I'm Clay Burton. Thanks for joining us.